You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome to this week's episode of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. This week, I also have a shirt on. This week,
yeah,
I am
more of an angel in here.
Yeah, I had to wear a death metal shirt for the death metal band. You know, what I mean? I had to.
You had to look through all your emo shirts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had to cry. I had to go through all the shirts soaked in tears. But no, today I am joined with Luca Indrio of the Oakland-based, I think you're still Oakland-based at least, California-based.
The band is based in Oakland still, yes, sir.
Nice. Yep. Well, welcome to the show. We had, like we were previously talking just 3 seconds prior to starting this podcast, I had to check to see which one of you guys has previously been on the show, and we had your drummer, Chad, God, I think that was like in 2019 or 2020 during the pandemic or something like that. It was crazy.
Right on, man.
A lot's
going
on.
So you already
on.
Know some...
Yeah, I know a little something about it.
You already spilled the beans.
Well, I think in that time, in that little media shuffle, you guys were promoting Mortal. I think that was the record that had just come out then, and you currently are on track to release another one in a couple weeks here, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks. You have Lifeless Birth coming out on Tank Crimes on April 12th. So. Let's just jump into it. What's the big difference between, you know, Mortal and Lifeless Birth for like the common person who just listens to death metal?
Well, Lifeless Birth, if you never heard our band, we're like, you know, we have aggressive parts with a lot of riffs. It's definitely down-tuned metal. And, you know, we got parts also that are more melodic, some weird tempos. We got some groove. We got some breakdowns. We got all the good stuff in there. And I feel like the main difference between Mortal and Lifeless Birth is that we just got better at it. So I feel that, like, you know, the Necrod is still Necrod. We still sound like us, but like the aggressive parts are more aggressive. The melodic parts are more interesting. I feel like that the breakdown, slowdown parts, the more groovy parts, some more intense. I think we're just getting better at what we do. So I feel like overall, composition-wise and sound-wise, is a better album. And I think people will be able to enjoy it from the first song to the last one.
Yeah, and you've been a band for almost
13 years.
Yeah, a little over a decade. So, you know, it takes some time to kind of settle in. Not that you guys weren't settled in half a decade ago or anything like that, but you know, you started putting out records in 2017 after being a band for a number of years then, so you know, to get settled in, that makes sense.
Yeah, it just gets better, man. Also because we never had a lineup changes.
That's true.
So the more you play together, just the same three motherfuckers, he gets like, you know, you get a chemistry going
that is
then
true.
It's like, you know, it's hard to beat.
Off topic really quick, I always thought this was very strange, and it could be that Chad's just very youthful and good looking as such. What are the age differences between the three of you guys? Because you guys have been together for over, you know, 13 years now.
Well,
so
when we started, Chad was 18.
Yeah, I was going to say, he looks like a baby still.
Yeah, and I just turned 24. That's okay. Because he drinks baby's blood.
Well, that happens. It's part of the whole death metal vibe, you know?
Then, okay, I mean, right now I'm 37, Chad is now 32 or 33, and Sonny, our guitar player, is 49.
Wow, so it's got a little, you know, discrepancy in age.
Yeah, because, like, Chad is from 1991, I'm from 1987, and Sonny's from 1975. Oof. So we each cover our own decade.
Yeah, and if you ever need, like, a fourth person just hang around and, like, ska dance on stage, I can come fill in the role of 83 baby, you know what I mean?
There you go. We got the 80s covered.
Yeah.
We would need someone from the 2000s or from the 60s.
Yeah. I had to ask because he just always, like, again, like he said, he has a youthful glow. So I just was curious as to, you know, find our own.
It's because we do what we like.
It's true. So how did you guys link up with the other member? Oh, God, I'm fucking blanking on his name. What'd you say his name was?
Sonny?
Sonny, yeah.
Oh, Sonny, we all lived in the same place. We all lived in the Bay Area at the time. We were all living in Oakland, and we've known each other for a while, and me and Chad were waiting for the right person to add to the band. we already had two of our cassettes, demos out, the first one self-titled and the Into the Labyrinth tape. And we already had the songs ready for a third tape. And we were not rushing getting a guitar player because we wanted to find the right person that was going to be able to tour and do everything that is needed to be doing to be in a serious band, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, Sonny, we knew he has been tour for a long time with his old band Saviors, and he was kind of like on the verge of, like, you know, that band ending after mm-hmm. a bunch of years. And so Sonny was available up for grab. He wanted to have a local band. We gave him the tapes. We already been friends for years. We gave him the tapes. He liked them. He came practice with us, and we talked to him about the project and what our intentions were. And he was down, and, you know, he has been in the band since then. Now it's been like 12 years.
Yeah. So like
11 years, 12 years.
In the beginning, were there any kind of like, reservations holding him back from joining or going full on with you guys? Just because, again, Chad's so young.
Oh, no. It was just like, younger. You know, we haven't even considered him at the time before, because we were just like, me and Chad were doing everything on our own. We were jamming, the two of us, and I was recording the guitar parts. I still write all the songs on guitars myself.
Okay, cool.
And then we were like, you know, we had a few people asking to be in the band, but they were not the right candidates. So when Sonny came to mind, I think we met at the show somewhere in Oakland, and we gave him the tape and we asked him if he wanted to be in the band. We just wanted someone who we knew he was ready to go on tour a lot. Because that was our intention when we started the band. We wanted to do a band that would be on the road and not just a band that, like, you know, practice and once in a while record something. We wanted to do everything that the band needs to do.
Gotcha.
So it's like, we needed the right person. We know Sonny has been doing it for a year, and we know Sonny's a sick guitar player. We know he wasn't coming exactly from like death metal or extreme metal, but like, we knew he was capable of it. And also I knew that he was the kind of guitar player that prefers playing through like a Marshall JCM 800s and whatnot, like with the more like a, you know, a more classic sound rather than a more modern sound. And we were looking for that too. So there was a lot of elements that were perfect in Sonny for being in Necroc. And it all worked out, and it's still working out great.
Interesting. Yeah, I was just curious because like the age gaps, you know, like would Sonny not be as forthcoming with it because like maybe you guys can't tour as often because Chad's so young, or you know, maybe he doesn't have any experience in touring or
young. Regardless of the age, we're all on the same page.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that now. Obviously you're rolling ahead. Speaking of which, let's go back to the comparisons between Mortal and Lifeless Birth here. One thing I've noticed, because you guys have shared a handful, I think a pair of singles so far. Cut the Cord and Drill the Skull are out now, streaming anywhere and everywhere. One thing I definitely noticed was that the overall sound of those two singles, at least, kind of differ from Mortal. But you guys, you definitely recorded at the same location, same studio. You still at Earth Ear Hammer, but you mastered it with a different person. And again, it could just be me thinking that it sounds different, but do you guys...
I mean, we mastered it with different person from Mortal, but it's the same person who mastered Broad Offerings.
Okay.
Our previous album. And Audio Siege is Brad Borright. And like, I feel like, the master is important on the record, but also I feel that like, we kind of like took as an example, because it's like, we worked with Greg Wilkinson recording Blood Offerings and Mortal, and now Lifeless Birth. So we took as an example our previous works, and we kind of tried to get what we really liked about the sound of Mortal and what we really liked about the sound of Blood Offerings, and we tried to get the best of the two worlds and make it into a new sound for Lifeless Birth that wasn't as far from the other ones, but it was just a more refined sound of our previous two albums.
Mm.
And then we decided to go with Brad Borright because...
Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on The Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this, give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
We know that Brad knows the band really well, and we know that he respects a lot of the work that you do in the studio with the mixing. It doesn't go and change your sound completely, you know, with the mastering. And he's an amazing mastering guy. So, like, you know, we decided to go back to Brad, not because Alan Duchesne wasn't good. Like, Alan is amazing as well. Mm-hmm. But, like, we just felt that, like, we wanted to have kind of, like, we were starting more from a blood offering sound than a mortal sound to do this album. So
okay, that makes sense.
We took a little bit blood offering as a comparison and trying to add the elements from mortal that we really liked. So we decided that Brad Boreight was the correct person to explain all that to, you know?
Yeah. And it does, I mean, and I bring that up not to say that it sounds worse or better or anything like that. It just, that's one of the first things I noticed when you listen to the pair of singles, the new singles, compared to your previous album a couple years ago. But again, like, so much changes in that time frame too, not just your, you know, your taste or the the editor's taste or the engineer's taste or anything like that, but so does production value and production skill. And
Greg upgrade his studios constantly.
Yeah,
spent a lot of money
equipment
on it. Yeah, two more years means, or three more years more means, that there is more good shit in there, and he might have learned some new tricks, you know.
Yeah,
more experience.
Now, you've been in death metal for quite some time.
Because I had death metal bands before Necra.
Yeah, well, and also I'm assuming you grew up listening to a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah, but I've been playing it for a long time too.
Yeah. As far as, like, the sound of albums for death metal has come and gone, or not gone, but it has, you know, progressed over the last, you know, four decades or something like that. Do you find that it's losing a bit of its luster from the sound perspective, or is it gaining more, nuance with the ability to do more in the production and mastering side?
Well, that's all. I feel that things are more accessible now for even starting bands or bands that don't have a great budget. You can access a good recording for cheaper now, mm-hmm. I think. You know, well, before it was probably way more expensive and only a few people were able to do it, you know. Now I feel that, like, things are getting less expensive. Like, someone can create his own little studio inside of his practice space. And if he's good at using the items that he's got, he can get a decent recording done.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what something that changed is recording has become a little bit more accessible. And also the softwares that people use to record are becoming more intuitive and less complicated.
A lot of AI.
That doesn't mean, that you really, I don't know how to fucking do it, you know. But I feel that someone can get into it and then learn it if he wants. But I also feel like his personal taste, because it's like, you know, extreme metal or death metal or whatever you want to call it, is like, it means a lot of different things from a person to another. Like, there is super produced stuff that is all copy and paste, recorded with, like, you know, hyper modern mezza boogies and guitars. Mm-hmm. And then there is the more classic sound. There is albums that sound more, some albums have more of a live feeling, and some albums have more of, like, a 100% studio production, you know.
Yeah,
so it's like, it depends a lot what the band wants and how do you want to sound. Like, to me, it's always like, you know, I want it to catch a real sound, you know. It's, if you can't see us live, our sound on the record is fairly close to the sound that we have live.
Yeah,
you know.
And, you know, that's something that I, that's why I kind of brought up the the differences in the two singles with the last album, because I found that Mortal was very clear and crisp. Like, you can hear like a lot of stuff, and not that you can't on the new singles, but like you said, there's definitely a different layer of element somewhere along the line that sounds or gives it like a feel of more of a live situation. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at maybe earlier, is that it does sound differently, not in a bad way whatsoever. It's just...
No, yeah, that was somewhat intentional.
Okay,
you know?
Okay. Interesting.
Because we did feel that Mortal sounded really good, but we also felt that it was sounding a little too crisp and bright, a little too clean up, and it was missing a little bit of the low hand that instead we had on Blood Offerings. Mm. You know, they both sound really good, but like with this third album, we wanted to still get the clarity that you can understand all the riffs. You know, we don't want it to sound muddy, you know, that you don't know what's going on. So we wanted to have the clarity, but we also wanted to have more of a raw, low hand, powerful sound that it makes you feel like you're in the room with the band playing, you know?
Yeah. And again, I've only heard the two singles, and it feels and sounds similar to that. But again, Mortal shreds, and you can hear everything very clearly and crisp. But, you know, it's one of those things where like death metal is spawned from those times where people are like recording everything on like a tape deck almost, and everything is very thin. And, you know, you can't, it's layered, but you can't really hear the nuance in the layers or anything like that. So, you know, I always am intrigued by what current death metal bands or bands that have been around for a longer period of time, how they go about navigating that, because obviously you do have advances in production and technique and all this other stuff. And then obviously also audio, like AirPods and speakers and all that stuff is getting better and better and better.
I mean, what's sad about modern times is that most people listen to streaming services like Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, and whatnot. And it's like all those streaming services has a very bad quality of audio.
Yep.
You know, because they have to host on their servers so much fucking music, so they compress everything. And then you listen to it, it sounds like shit. And maybe you don't even realize it because your ear is not trained enough, or also maybe you never heard the real version of the song on a record. You know, so you think that's the quality of it, but it's pretty much garbage.
Yeah, it's all one of the things I learned a couple of years ago was when you're listening to anything on like Tidal, Spotify, Apple, or whatever in your streaming service, it's mastered for like an AirBud or like an Apple AirPod.
Yeah, there is so much compression on it. You lose a lot of the dynamics. You lose a lot of the sound, of the real sound of it.
Yeah,
that's why I always tell people, like, you know, buy physical records of the records that you really like. Okay. And, you know, if you don't like to have physical stuff, because I understand that, like, you know, even my house is small. It's like, I can't fill it with a million records of everything I like. But it's like, you can buy the digital download. You can buy the digital files, usually for like $7. Like,
it's,
we sell our new
included
record for
it's
$7.
It's included
bucks
in a lot of stuff, too. If you buy an album,
and
you
it's
get the
included,
digital
yeah,
album.
If you buy the tape or the LP, you get a code to download it. But, like, if you don't want to have the physical record because you don't know where the fuck to put it, you can still buy the digital files, and then you can have a library of the records you like that they actually have a quality of format that it allows you to listen to it in a way that it should be, you know, because... Sometimes I'm like, God damn, we put so much effort into making this shit sound good, and then they throw it on Spotify and it sounds like shit. Right?
Yeah. You know? It's like a battle. It's an all-time battle that you have, you know?
A little bit.
I am going through, this is Shinfo, no one's going to care about this, but you're talking about physical media. I literally am rearranging my office here, and so I've got all my CDs taken down off of my shelf, and they're all stacked like right here. It's like 600 CDs.
Yeah, you can't even get to your bed to go to sleep. You're sleeping
like
on that
600
chair.
CDs, and all I need is like me to like swing my chair over one inch too far and knock all of them over or something like that. But
yeah, like a domino effect.
Yeah, I'm currently approaching like 1,000 physical media things, like 600 CDs and a bunch of vinyl and tapes and stuff like that.
You sell it all, you can buy a house.
Yeah. maybe not this year, but maybe next decade or something like that. A lot of people are sitting on good, you know, gold mines with their early death metal and hardcore records and
early
stuff.
Early presses.
Yeah. What does do you write the vocals for all this stuff, or is that like a group effort?
No, yeah, of course. Just of course. Here? Yeah, I write my own lyrics and vocal patterns and all of that.
Where do you come up with the themes or the lyrics for what the album is going to be, or what, or do the songs tie in to each other?
A little bit. Lyrically? Like, I feel like a lot of the thematics that I cover with my lyrics have been similar since the beginning of the band, because that's kind of like what I need to say. It's kind of like writing the lyrics is a slow process. It takes me way longer to write the lyrics than to write the music. And I have to spend time on it. I really have to take time out of my day every day when I'm writing the lyrics and be like, okay, now I'm going to be alone for 2-3 hours and fucking think about this and get everything out. And then, you know, you're not writing a book. You're writing lyrics for a song. So you have to fit them into specific vocal patterns.
Yeah.
So you have to get your content out of what you want to say, but also you have to find the right way of saying it that doesn't take as many words, or that it uses some words instead of others, or you have to rephrase the sentence to make it fit in a certain space in the song. Because you usually come out with the vocal, or at least me, I usually come out with the vocal pattern first before the letters going, before the words go in there. Like, I have an idea of how rhythmically my vocals should sound on the song, you know? Like, it's kind of like a musical instrument, but then you have to fit a bunch of words inside of what you're, you know? And then it's like, so it's like, it's a whole lot of compromising, you know? It's a lot of compromising to say what you want to say in a way that it fits in the space that you got.
So does it always happen with lyric content first, then cadence, or is it just whatever? Like, do you have a cadence in mind when you're writing, and then you kind of
usually I have
that?
Like that a sound in my mind, and then I have a concept that I want to talk about, but sometimes I don't even know what I want to talk about, and then I try to get the music to inspire me, or I try to get like the you know, just think about stuff, start writing stuff. It's kind of like an introspection moment where you have to just like start writing down stuff and start thinking about stuff, and it kind of comes to you as you go, but it is a long process. Like, it doesn't happen like fast. I feel like that I can write a whole album, like as far as riffs and song structures, in like 2 or 3 months, but it'll take me way longer to write the lyrics. That's why I always try to take notes when something comes to my mind, or like something, I have a conversation with someone, or I'm watching a movie, or if I get any idea at any moment in my life, I try to write it down so that I have some notes to look at, to look back at later on when it's time to write some lyrics for an album. And some of the shit will be like, oh no, what the fuck was I thinking? But there's some other things that make me think, you know, and then from there.
Do you do that with like a pen and pad, or do you do that on like a note app on your phone, or how do you go?
Like on the notes on my phone. I used to do it by hand. I still have all this like, a bunch of books full of reading down shit, but now I just find it easier to use like the notes on my phone, also because it fixes the spelling. You can go and erase stuff, and it doesn't get so messy. On a piece of paper, sometimes it becomes so messy. There's stuff you scratch off, and then there is something pointing to another word up there, and then it goes back there, and then you go look at it after a week and you're like, I don't even know, I don't even understand myself, you know.
It's the ramblings of a madman, you know, in the fucking, in a book.
Yeah, just... totally. I have a bunch of books like that for our first demos and albums, but like now I mostly do it on my phone.
Interesting.
I mean, it's just more convenient, and also I always have it with me, so I can always write down a note real quick.
Yeah, it goes, you know, I go back and forth, I don't go back and forth, but I talk to people, and sometimes people do still use, you know, traditional analog pen and paper, and they walk around with a little notebook and they jot things down, and they still have a cell phone. So, you know, it's just more of a thing with their like.
And also, it's like, you know, I send my notes to my email constantly in case I lose my phone.
Yeah. Do you not sync it to the cloud?
When you have that little book full of lyrics, then you're so scared of losing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
Then you really have to worry about it. Like, where the fuck? Sometimes you get those little heart attacks where you're like, where the fuck can I put it?
Yeah. I can imagine. It's like losing a hard drive or something. You know, it basically is a hard drive. It's an analog hard drive of fucking text data.
Pen and paper.
Something else that I noticed about your full-length discography, for the most part, you kind of like hover around 7 songs. Like, that's like, for a full length for you guys, it's like 7-ish songs. And I'm curious.
Yeah, because Does it? I mean, there is a reason.
Go ahead. Yeah, explain that, and then I'll ask my other question.
I mean, the thing is that it's like, you know, we write music that is going to be pressed on a vinyl.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, when you go over 40 minutes, 42, 43 minutes on a vinyl, you start losing quality. Because on each side, you're putting so much music that the lines start becoming thinner.
Yeah.
So you lose quality of the sound. After 18 minutes per side, the quality start going down. So you can stretch it to 20, 21 minutes, but you don't want to go longer than that.
Interesting.
Like, we still want our record to sound good, you know?
Yeah.
Don't want to do it. Otherwise, you have to do a double LP.
Yeah.
But then it's like it becomes so expensive that then people would have to pay like over $30 to buy your record. And we want our record to still be accessible, you know? Yeah.
Interesting.
Without losing quality of sound.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone use that as the reasoning. So I'm glad that I asked you that, because that is very informative for those who are audiophiles and, you know, in bands in general. Now, of that material that you have, those 40-ish minutes of LP tracks, how much writing, how much that ended up on the cutting floor do you have around? Like, are there songs that are on?
Oh, if there is extra songs.
Yeah, like Mortal or Lifeless Birth, are there songs that are hanging out on the cutting room floor that may end up on like a B-side EP or something like that?
No, there is none of that.
Okay, so you show up with the 8-7 songs and you're ready to rock. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Every song makes it on the album. Like, yeah, because if a song is not that good, I'll realize it before I finish it. You know, I'm not gonna like if I work on a song from beginning to the end, it's because I know it's good enough.
So, how many songs don't make it to the final completion?
There is a lot of riffs that eventually, you know, you start recording some stuff. I always record myself when I write. Usually I do videos and then I go back and listen to it. And sometimes it's something that sounded really good while you were doing it. Then you listen back the day after and it's not that good. And you're just like, screw, bye, be gone. I have a lot of videos of riffs that I never used, but they're not complete songs. They're just riffs.
Oh yeah. How do you keep track of those? Are those all just like on a computer somewhere or on?
Yeah, I mean that they're there, but like eventually they even get lost. I don't care too much about them because if they didn't make it, they weren't that good.
Hmm. You guys.
And there is some that sometimes like there was one riff that was supposed to. I think on Lifeless Bird there was just one riff that got cut off. Just a couple of weeks before we went recording, I felt that the song was way too long and I was like, let's just dump this whole part.
Mm.
But I don't care. I don't mind it. I mean, it's like you lose stuff in life anyway and there's lots forever. So it's like not everything is that important.
You're also telling me like out of 40 something plus minutes of riffage, you only tossed one little section out of the entire album.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I mean, true. But like it might never get used again and I'm fine with it. I don't care.
So
it's easy to write riffs. What's hard is to write a song.
Okay.
You know, putting the riffs together is the hard part. Anybody can write a sick riff. I think lots of people can write one sick riff or two, but then putting a song together, that's the heart, in my opinion. That's the hard part.
The compilation of it. I get that. Is there a riff that's... What's the oldest riff that you've gone back that you didn't use and brought to life at a later album? Or is there any riff that you kind of...
No, never happened. No. Just, everything that doesn't make it, then it doesn't get
revisited. Trash forever. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like to trash stuff forever.
I feel you.
Sometimes you gotta do it, man.
I know. Yeah, it's something to be said.
It takes away space for the new stuff because it's like every record is a representation of a certain time period.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't want to go revisit something from 2018 and throw it in your 2025 record, you know, whatever.
For sure.
And it's like it just doesn't belong there.
And you don't want to. You know, it's very good that you can just turn your back and move on from that and not think about it. You know,
that's
a lot of people wouldn't be able to let go.
Never. We got new stuff now.
So you guys just wrapped up supporting Municipal Waste on their Brain Squeeze tour.
Sick.
You did a tour with Dead Heat, and I don't know why I'm going to tell you this or why I'm saying this on the podcast, but that we started posting about that band a little over a year ago, and now it's a constant running joke in the comments. So
what's the joke?
The goo. It's goo.
I developed a good joke on tour about Daddy and about Ghoul. We were on tour with Municipal Waste and Ghoul and Daddy.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was singing him. Oh, man. I was telling him, you know, Daddy and Ghoul. I was telling him, Daddy, Daddy Ghoul, Daddy, Daddy Ghoul. That's it. That's the whole joke, man.
Well, maybe that'll be a new running comment fucking joke on the website. But yeah, I guess one of the guys, Mike from Dead Heat. Is it Dead Heat? It could be Dead Heat. It might be a different person, but someone in the band.
Dude, those guys are great.
If someone in the band's name is as under the band, it's Mike Goo, and so everyone just comments on everything all the time now. So, I think it's either Dead Heat or God, it was another band.
Maybe you're making fun of the wrong band.
I think it's a different band. They're a Florida band too. So now I'm losing. Now I'm getting
Heat. They're from California.
Yeah, now I'm getting even deeper into the worst woods.
It was great to be on tour with them, man. They're super cool guys. They're just down to earth, smoking weed all the time.
Yeah. You know, baseball season's starting up, and that reminded me, I live in Florida, and so I go see my team, which is the Rays in Tampa, and I did happen to catch Frank from Hatebreed and Tony from Municipal Waste at a game.
Yeah, Tony is there.
Yeah, I was at a game with them, or not with them, but we ran into each other and watched the game together. So that was kind of fun, and you know, I was just thinking about that because I'm going there tomorrow. I'm going to watch opening day tomorrow, so.
Let's see who you're gonna meet, man.
Hopefully, that'd be cool.
Never know.
Yeah, you never. I didn't know that day, and that happened. But you guys just announced a new tour as well. You're gonna go your Lifeless Birth tour. You're taking out Brat, Phobophilic,
Bat and Phobophilic.
Phobophilic, yeah, there you go.
And Street Tunes.
Street Tunes. Yeah. That's a hard, dude. There's so many.
Yeah, we're leaving June 5th from Berkeley, California, and we end in Portland, Oregon, on July 13th.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be like a 6-week tour. We're going a lot of places. So
full North America.
We're hoping everybody will be able to go to the show if they want to.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorite areas to tour in America?
We love playing in San Antonio, Texas, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, Richmond, Virginia. Let me think about it. We always have great shows in Canada. We always have great shows in Omaha, Nebraska. We have great shows in Chicago. There is a lot of places. Dallas, Texas. I don't know, man. It also depends on the tour, but there is some solid places where we always have great shows. Portland, Seattle. Definitely. San Antonio, Dallas. In Texas, people fucking go nuts.
Yeah.
Our guitar player is from New Mexico, so we always have great shows in New Mexico. I don't know. We're having great shows almost everywhere, man. But some places are just fucking nuts. I think one of the place where I love going every time is San Antonio, Texas. Mm. I love the weather. I love the amount of Latinos there. They go fucking nuts. The food is great. The city is nice. I like it because it's like deserty and hot. I like that shit. And the atmosphere is always great. But yeah, we have a lot of places where we do good. And, you know, our fans are crazy, man. It's like we try to bring a show that inspire people to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want our show to be intense and kind of wild and lawless. And so, like, you know, in some places they perceive it and they get it. And, you know, we have some pretty crazy fans that they're coming to the shows to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know?
Do you guys ever try to revisit places that you didn't go over well in previous tours? Or do you just kind of like...
Yeah, we've done that. Like, because we have done many U.S. tours, and it's like every time is better, you know? Every time is better. The first time you go somewhere, you've never been there, not many people shows up. Then the second time, there's a little more people. And then by the third time, it's a great show, you know? So you gotta go back to places over and over until people fucking gets it, you know?
That's true.
And that's the only way to make a name for yourself, because it's like I understand that. You show up on a Tuesday night in North Carolina, you've never been there. Don't expect to have the whole town coming to your show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then you do it enough time that finally you have a sick show everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's
that's kind of how it works.
That's a testament for like those road dog type bands who are just the kind of bands that'll just go out on the road for many months out of the year, whereas you don't really see that often these days anymore. I remember when I was like 20 years ago, I was in a band, and it was just like a bunch of younger, unsigned guys just hitting the road all the time. It was just, you know, you break your...
I don't think there is any other way, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it's like if you want your band to be known, you got to go play everywhere multiple times.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get lost in the sauce with like streaming numbers, follower account, like account follow, you know, like your stats
from
social.
Yeah, but that's kind of dumb because it's like, you know, for example, I know that lots of our fans buy our physical record.
Right.
We sold 14,000 copies of Mortal. So there is people that's got that record and listen to it, you know, and they're smart enough to listen to the record rather than listening to some shitty
streaming
service with like shitty audio quality, you know? Yeah. So it's like those numbers matter to an extent. I think the numbers that really matter is how many people come to your show. That's the number that matters, because I know of bands that they have a lot of streams and then nobody goes see them live.
Right.
Because eventually lots of these people, they just like one of your song and they add it to one of your their playlists, but that they're not actually real fans of the band. When I know that Necro fans, they fucking listen to the album from the beginning of the end, and they'll go buy the new album when it comes out, and they'll come to the show when we come around. You know, I think those are the numbers that matters. It's like, who comes see you when you go play live?
Yeah. Did you said 14,000 copies of Mortal sold?
Yeah, that's what Scotty told us. He's like, wow. Because he did all the represses, and those counts everything. You know,
right,
LPs,
right.
CDs, yeah. Tapes, digital downloads.
But does that count? Because I know like
some... And we just repressed it again.
We just
did another repress of Mortal.
Nice.
Because now that with the new album, people want to... Some new fans want to buy the old stuff again.
Yeah. Well, when you only have a limited number of variants, you know, that is...
Yeah, right.
So like that number doesn't include streams and right? That doesn't include like...
No
whatever.
Streams.
Okay,
no,
yeah,
that's just physical copy or digital downloads. Like, you know, when you buy the digital copy.
That's pretty awesome. I have to give you props on that. I mean, you know, for being...
Yeah, I know. It's great. And I know that, like, you know, because, like, you know, we play a kind of music that is, like,
niche.
Where people want to own the physical copy and they want to listen to the old album. They don't want to... This is not, like, pop music where you're trying to make it with one song.
Yeah.
And then nobody gives a shit about your album. It's like, you know, people that listen to Necra, they're like, a little more old-fashioned style. Like, you know, they'll want to have the fucking record. They want to spin it. They want to listen to the whole thing.
Yep.
You know, and it's cool. It's great because that's what we do, you know. We grew up doing that. We didn't grow up adding one song to the playlist and then another one and then listening to half a song and moving on to the next one. It's like, you know, what the fuck is that?
The only thing I do that with is probably pop music and pop music from back like 20 years ago, like rap and pop music from back in
like
the day.
The one hit wonder.
Yeah,
right?
I'll do a lot of
the whole record, right?
A lot of 90s and early 2000s hip hop and pop end up on a one song playlist. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah, but it's like, you know, we are a different kind of music.
Of course.
Like, you know, we're not trying to make it with just one song. We're trying to have a loyal fan base that understand what we're doing. And we want to see them at the show. We want to have this exchange with the crowd. It's like the live show is a big part of like extreme metal music, you know, performing in front of people, not just the one song they know, but like, you know, all the songs they want to hear.
Yeah. And you guys, that's your third with Tank Crimes. And that, I mean, again, that's kind of wild that you guys have done 14,000 when you really put the numbers, I mean, you know, comparative to other bands and stuff like that, because again, you are in a very niche genre of extreme music that not a lot of people would listen to in general. So like you said, the fans that you do have are kind of fans. They're like wanting to be there, wanting to be a part of it. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with your new record coming out here, Lifeless Birth. That'll be interesting to see, and to see how the numbers pan out after. I mean, obviously, we're talking about the album 4 years after you released Mortal, so you know you're repressing a couple. Yeah, you're repressing and repressing, but again, that, you know, there's a lot of interest in Necrot, so that's cool too. What brought you over to America from Italy? You're originally from Italy, correct?
Yeah, I was born in Florence, Italy, and I moved to Oakland, California when I was 21. And I did it mostly because I wanted to be in a place where to find the right people to play metal.
Oh, wow. So you came just by yourself, or did your family move out here with you? Or
no, I came by myself. I have some family. My uncle lives in Oakland since he was really young. Like, he emigrated when he was like 30. He's like 72 years old now. Mm. So he emigrated to the U.S. like in the 70s. So it's like I had my uncle living in Oakland, and but I came by myself, and like, you know, I got a job in a restaurant, Italian restaurant, and then I put an ad on Craigslist to find people to play with, and then I figured out my status, immigration status, and I was there for like 14 years, and then in 2020 I moved to Mexico when the pandemic started.
Wow.
So now I live in Mexico full time.
Oh, you're there
but
now.
I have a double citizenship, US and Italian.
Interesting. That's cool. What made
And then I traveled. What's that?
No, go ahead.
No, yeah, I traveled to the US to do the band, you know, we go recording, we go on tour, all of that. So it's like I go back and forth.
That's pretty sweet. So what made you outside of your uncle being in Oakland, the Bay
Area. Oh, no, yeah. My uncle had a minimum part in this because it's like...
So what made
also
you decide
like my uncle
to...
lived in the U.S. all his life. So it's like I didn't see him like regularly.
No, I know. But like, what were you just like hip to the bands that were going on in the Bay Area?
Yeah, because it's like, you know, I had bands in Italy and where we were trying to do stuff, and we did a European tour, and then one of the band members didn't want to do shows anymore. Like, it's just a different society where it's really hard to get a band going for real, you know? So I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here. And I decided to come to the Bay Area because of all that you hear about it, you know, all the great bands that came out. It's such a magical place for music and extreme music, you know, it still is. So I was like, fuck, I need to get there. And so I went there, and then I stayed there, and I joined the band after 2 weeks that I was there. Mm. I put an ad on Craigslist. I was 21. I remember I put I'm a bass player. I want to start or join a band that sounds like either. These were the bands that I put on. I put like Motorhead, Venom, Discharge, Morbid Angel. I put some like, you know, some of the classics. I was like, this is going to attract the right people. And that's when I joined this band called Acephalix in end of 2008. And then I played with them for like years, and then I joined the band Vastum, which was some of the same members, and I was in that band for like 13 years. And then a couple of years later, in 2011, I met Chad and we started Necra.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's weird. That's cool. So
it's weird.
I mean it's not weird, it's just there's a lot to be said of like someone at your age just going like, I'm gonna move across the world just to fulfill my little dream.
It was not a walk in the park. It was tough.
No, I mean,
the first few years
were
like insane. They were intense because you're not used to like not know anybody. You're not used to a lot of things. You're not used to have to figure it out, a lot of shit on your own, and having to learn properly the language and having to find a job, a place, and figure it out. You can trust who you can't, and you're still really young, so you make a lot of stupid ass decision that gets you into like some serious situations where you don't come out of it. Like, you know, it's like it was like part of it was very traumatic.
Well, I'm sure, because you're you're probably worried about being deported or, you know, getting in trouble enough to where you have to get kicked out and go.
Yeah, there is
home.
A lot of that. There is a lot of that. And then I did some. Yeah, totally. There is a lot of it. And then it's like, you know, I ended up getting married with someone from the US, and we had this relationship that was insanely complicated with all the pressure also of like, you know, my status was related to that relationship, based on it. So it was like, you have problems understanding what's going on in your head, because you cannot just base your decision on your emotions when you have so much on your shoulder and you're so young and you're like, you know, it was like an intense period of time, and then having to work a lot and like trying to do the bands in between. I used to have two jobs. I would work at a coffee shop in the morning from like 10 to 3 p.m. And then I would get to work in a restaurant at 3:30 p.m. with then half an hour break, and I would come out at like 11 at night.
Yeah, that's great.
And I wouldn't work every day, but then it's like the day that I wasn't working, I was going to band practice and trying to do the music stuff. And, you know, it has all been like a long process. Yeah. But now, like, you know, now I'm here and I'm fucking going on tour with Necra. We got a new album. We're on the cover of Decibel magazine. It's like, you know, it paid off.
Yeah, it's a lot of grinding.
A lot of sacrifice, a lot of hard work, but it's getting you somewhere getting me somewhere.
It's definitely grinding. It's definitely a grind. And a lot of people, you know, I guess that's why some bands persevere and some bands do not, because some bands can hack it, whether it's doing those things like you, working two jobs and doing the band and whatever, or it's just too hard and they don't get enough likes on their post and they quit, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, but like if you quit, you quit.
That's true. That's true. Out of the way. You know? Get out of the way. What made you decide to move to Mexico?
Well, because during the pandemic, all of our shows got canceled. And like, so I had no job with the band. And then I had no, my only other job I ever done was working in a restaurant as a busboy or a waiter. So like all the restaurants were shut down. Like there was no work. And I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here because I'm going to run out of money. Because living in the Bay Area is fucking expensive.
Hell yeah, it is. I know that.
You know?
My partner was there.
It's super expensive. And also, it's like, I was so fed up with it anyway. Because it's like, I moved there in 2008. And I moved to Oakland. Shitty neighborhood. You could get a rent a place. You could rent a room for $300 a month when I moved there. You know? And that gave me so much time to play music and do whatever I want. But then slowly the prices of everything went up and up and up to the fucking ridiculous. Like, ridiculous. So when the pandemic hit, I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like, you know, so I just went to Mexico because I used to go to Mexico after tours anyway to chill out and relax. And then I went to Mexico and I speak Spanish because I've learned it. Mm. I learned it by working in restaurants for so many years with people from Latin America working in restaurants. And like, so I was like, fuck it. And I had a friend in Oakland that needed a room because he got kicked out of his house. So I told him, I was like, dude, just go stay in my place. Pay your rent and I'm out. I'm gonna go to Mexico and then, you know, stay there as long as you want. And if at one point I decide to come back, we'll play by here, you know. Yeah. But for now, just go stay in my room. And so then I came down to Mexico and then to see even how long the pandemic was going to last. But then it lasted so long that I just stayed here. And then here I met my current wife. I met this person that we felt in love and we're still together. And, you know, I at one point I had no reason to go back to the Bay Area also because I couldn't afford it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I'm going to go back there to what? To do what? Spend $1,000 a month to live in a room with people I don't even like, you know? Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. So and it's like, you know, I come from Italy. It's like, these numbers are insane, you know, because it's like, my mom, she will make $800 a month with her full-time jobs when I was like, at the time I was living, you know, it's like, these numbers of like $1,000 a month or more for a room with other people. And then you go to the grocery stores and the prices are like fucking Dubai prices. It's like, what the fuck am I? You know what I mean? You can.
I do. I will say this. I went to San Francisco, which is, you know, not Oakland, but in the Bay Area. I went to San Francisco for the first time to hang out with my business partner who also helps with Lamb Goat. He's from here, but he moved out there like a decade or so ago. But I finally went out there and hung out with him. And, you know, I live on the East Coast, Florida, and I also had culture shock going out there. You know, this was like in August last year. So I remember like the first day I had to call back home and I was talking to my girl and I was like, it is nuts out here, dude. It's like, it's so different out here. It's so crazier than what we are used to on a day-to-day in Florida, you know, but.
No, I believe it. No, I've traveled the U.S. multiple times and it's like, it is insane. You know, it's fucking nuts. But I have to tell you that like on this last tour, I noticed that a lot of places, even in the Midwest or other parts of the U.S. are becoming really expensive.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, I feel like it's catching up all over the place. And it's like, I think it's just another way to keep us all poor and struggling. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, there's a lot to do with like what money is based off of. It's not based off gold anymore. You know, there's government stuff involved. It's all, you never know. It's all shady.
I mean, I always think the worst.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's probably
and
true.
I've always think the worst all my life. I'm not going to change it now. Yeah. So to me, there is, I always think the worst. I think that they do it on fucking purpose.
It's probably,
there is part of it that is like, it's just greedy motherfuckers. It's like, you know, the moment that they see how much they can charge you and you're still paying it, they're going to charge you that. And then they're going to make up some shit of why that's happening. Yeah. You know, because then they were like, oh, the price of gas is so expensive, blah, 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 blah. And then you go see that those companies are making their record year of fucking money that is coming in. And you're like, oh, shit. So what's the real fucking reason? You know what I mean? It's like, you guys can never fucking take a pay cut to make everybody feels better, but we always have to, you know,
we're suffering.
Find the last dime in our fucking pocket so that we can pay off all your fucking big houses and yachts and vacations and whatever.
That's good stuff
and
for them.
And bombs and wars.
Yeah.
Like, fuck those assholes.
Dude. The thing that's crazy about the gas, like paying for something or paying higher for something and never paying lower, I learned when I was younger, I remember gas, when I first started driving and I was like 16, 17, up to like 20, gas wasn't even a dollar where I live. It was like 79 cents, 89 cents for, you know, premium or whatever. And I remember it going above $2 at some point, you know, 5 years later. And I was thinking to myself, there's no reason it would ever go below $2 ever again. I don't know why they're so used to paying. Why would they ever go back?
Never going backwards. Yeah, I know. And then you think about, like, you know, your grandparents telling you, oh, we used to buy whatever with a dollar. And you're like, oh, wow, the same thing now is 100. And then you realize, you're like, oh, okay. When I'm going to be old, it's going to be 1,000.
Yeah. And it's going to be some cheap product from China or some other country. That's.
And it's like, you know, I don't understand economics enough, but I do understand when someone is fucking me over, you know.
I think that's all you have to be conscious of. That's all you really need to be conscious of. Let's end it on one. I got one more question for you, Luca, and then I think I can cut you loose and you can enjoy the Mexican environments.
Breeze.
Yes. My last question I want to end with is, how does an Italian long-haired death metal guy win over a Mexican Lolita?
Where are we going with this?
how do you win over a Mexican Lolita and Khan went into marrying you? How do you do that?
Oh no! Come on! It's like the culture is so similar.
Is
you
it?
Know what I mean? It is because we're Latin countries and we base a lot of our culture on food and relationships and, like, you know, loyalty and keep sticking together. It's like there is a lot that is, like, you know, more similar. Also, like, I can dive into it, but it's like, you know, the U.S. is an amazing place, you know, where you can actually achieve your career if you work hard. It's a place where they don't care where you come from, they don't care who you are, but if you're good at something, you're allowed to make the money, you're allowed to have success. And that's like a unique place in the world. You know, I have so much respect for the U.S. because I came there and I was able to do my career and successfully. And also I was able to be accepted even if I wasn't born there, because it's a place of immigrants. You know, there's people from all over the world, all kinds of cultures. They're like, you know, they make it such a rich place of culture and mix of people, which is great. But, like, you know, other places like Mexico or Italy, you don't have as many possibilities. You know what I mean? So you cannot be as ambitious and you cannot concentrate so much on your personal career or on yourself as an individual. They're way more community-oriented societies because of, like, of the economy and the limited possibilities. So it's like, I feel that, like, you grow up in a way where you give a lot of importance to relationships of the people close to you, where you grow up appreciating really people that show love to you. And I feel that, like, people are more ready in this kind of society, but not because they're better people, just because the way the society is structured, you're more ready to overcome difficulties to stay together and fix things, you know? When in the U.S., sometimes I feel like that there is such a glorification of the immediate reward or such a glorification of acquiring more and more and more and more and more status and more stuff and more money and more this and more that. And there is so much opportunities and there is so much freedom that then people, when there is a small difficulty, you just move on. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You just move on to the next person, or you just move on to the next opportunity. And then it's like, it's harder to maintain a relationship. It's harder sometimes to, some of the values are like, they're more inclined towards more superficial stuff, you know, in my opinion. And it's just a result of the way society it is, you know, which it has great opportunities and great advantages on some things. And for others, it becomes a little complicated.
Yeah.
Like to me, coming from Italy, dating in the Bay Area was a disaster. You know,
I can see that.
And I was there for like 12 years, 14 years. You know, I wasn't there for like 6 months.
It's California though, and I get it. I get it. It's a certain area of California, you know what I mean?
You know, every place is different. It serves its purpose. And that's what's also great about the United States. It's so big and so different that you can find a place where you like to be, you know? And I look at it even on a wider spectrum. I see like this world is so big and different that I can choose to be where I want to be, because I've already moved once and dropped everything from Italy to the United
States.
That's
true. You're good. You're good
to go. So for me, it was easy to do it again and come to Mexico and just stay here because I've done it before, you know? And then once you learn that, it's like, it's life-changing, because some people, they just stay in the place where they were born, even if they fucking hate it. And
so
they hate it all
people,
their life.
So many people.
And they never
that.
Take the step to fucking go somewhere else. There is so many different places. It's useless to stay in the wrong place and complain, you know?
That's the best thing I think that I ever did was being in a band was touring and traveling. That was the coolest
thing.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I was 19. And so, you know, it was very, like, at the time, I was like, me and my buddies are just going to go on this trip. You know, we're trying to make it and do all this, that, the other shit. But in reality, you're just really one giant road trip where you're playing music for 15 minutes a night, if that, you know. So you're just
right.
Really,
but you talk with the people.
Of course. You're
you see,
traveling
you see
around.
Different
yeah,
parts
yeah.
of you. It's cool to travel. It's so important. It should be. I mean, the problem is that it's like, it's expensive, you know. It's not as accessible anymore. But like, that's also why I you know, I think that like the traveling should be cheaper, much cheaper. Should be actually something that society pushes you to do. Because I feel like sometimes the most close-minded people is because they never saw anything else, you know. 100%. And then it's like you barely, it's like, you sure. It's like, you know, it's their fault, but not everybody's got the possibility, you know, of seeing farther than where they are. Not everybody's got the money or the time or the opportunity to travel. But it's like, once you have the chance to do it and you open yourself to different points of view, you understand everything so much better.
Yep. Broaden your horizons, broaden your interests, your likes, your passions, and all that stuff.
Yeah, you just become more accepted, more accepting of different
of course.
Points of view and cultures and everything.
Because you're privy to more, like you said, cultures, more in nuance in other people's lives in other countries, you know, day-to-day stuff. So, you know, it's different than what you're used to. Just like I said before, it's California is completely different than what I'm used to here in Florida. So, you know, you hear
about... No, man, it's like, forget about it. It's like, what? Me getting to California from Italy,
yeah,
I was blown away. Because in California is a place that has got so much respect for art and music, and you as an artist or a musician, while back at home in Italy, people will put you down. They'll be like, oh, I want to be a musician. They'll be like, yeah, whatever, dude. Go get a real job, dumbass. You know?
Yeah.
Or you'll be working a shitty job where they barely pay you, and you'll be like, hey, I need 2 days off to go play a show. They will treat you like shit. You'll be like, well, then go find a new job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that here, too.
You move to California, you tell people, I want to be a musician. People are like, fuck yeah, brother. Go for it. You know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
And it's like, you need that. You need that environment. If you want to be an artist, if you want to be a musician, you need to be in an environment like that.
Yeah.
You can't be in a town where everybody's making fun of you for wanting to write songs. You know what I mean?
Especially death metal songs, for sure. I understand.
Especially.
100%. Luca, it's been great. This hour goes by quick, and I love it when it does that.
Cheers, man.
We will end on Lifeless Birth coming out April 12th. I'm not looking at anything right now. April 12th, right?
April 12th on Tank Crimes Records.
Tank Crimes.
You can already pre-order it.
That's true.
And Scott is sending a sick Lifeless Birth poster. is huge.
Cool. Yeah, cool.
With all the pre-orders. So if you're waiting for the album to come out to order it, I say you don't wait and you pre-order it. You get a sick poster.
Yep, and if you want to preview a little of the album, they got the two songs out, the two singles, Drill the Skull and Cut the Cord, are streaming all over. Although, hey, like we said earlier, go buy the digital download and listen to that instead. All right, Luca.
Right on, man. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. Good luck. And hopefully we'll see you in Orlando in June. I think that's going to be the closest you'll be to us. So we'll try to stop by and say
hey. Orlando. We were there just a couple of weeks ago.
That's true.
What were you doing, man?
I was hanging around doing stuff. You know, I'm busy as shit. I was traveling last month. It's been hectic. I've been traveling.
Yeah, but hit me up if you want to come to the Orlando show next time. We'll get you on the guest list.
Will do, Luca. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day in the Mexican sun. I will enjoy this wet Florida day that we have.
The fucking Florida storm. Yes,
every day here for the summer now. So,
it might get sunny in a half an hour, then it rains again.
That's true. We'll see. Thank you very much, Luca. Awesome. Have a good one.
Thank you, man. Have a good rest of your day.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.